1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to Feldis and Kale. Dan is off this week, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And joining me on this segment of Feldis and Kale is a true Renaissance man. You laugh about that, but we're talking about Lieutenant Colonel Mike Moffitt, state representative from Loudoun. He is an author. He's an educator and a man who has spent a time in Afghanistan and has a perspective on what's going on over there that most of us do not. And Mike Moffitt, welcome back to the program.
It's always a pleasure to be with Kale and Dan and you all. Thank you.
Yep. Dan, vacationing in Iowa this week, his home state. But glad to have you back. Not a pleasant topic to discuss, but, Afghanistan is the number one topic in the world right now. And you spent some time over there. When were you there, Mike?
I was there in 2010 on special assignment from the Marine Corps down in Kabul. In fact, I met Fighting Joe Kenny, who you know, in Kabul at the embassy. But I spent most of my time in Helmand Province down in the south in the desert, which was the Marine Corps AO, or Area of Operations.
So, you know, Afghanistan is a vast country. And I don't think, a lot of people can grasp, and I'm certainly among them, the enormity of that country. We hear about a couple of cities all the time, including Kabul, that has been the primary focus of late. But this is a large, large country we're talking about.
Oh, it sure is, Ken. If you look at it superimposed on the United States, you'll see the vastness of this country. It's landlocked Central Asia, very tribal, very undeveloped, one of the poorest countries in the world, but a lot of history there and obviously of strategic value. And with the 20th anniversary of 9/11 coming up, it's a reminder of why we got there in the first place. Real quick, after 9/11, I went back on active duty. I was on General Frank's staff at Central Command, MacDill Air Force Base, top secret war room. In October of 2011, when Operation Enduring Freedom started, we get people into Afghanistan, not that many. Again, the movie 12 Strong, we had 12 Green Berets riding around on horses, calling in airstrikes, and with the warlords, were the ones we, flipped the Taliban out. And then I went there in 2010 in person, and then who'd have thought in 2021 we'd be seeing what we're seeing now? You never know.
Yeah, no, absolutely so. And when you were there, you met a gentleman by the name of Fahim Fazli. And tell us a little bit about Fahim and how your relationship with him developed.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, Ken. We've talked to Fahim. Fahim is a refugee from Afghanistan. He fled the communists back in 1983. A terrific story, just his escape from Afghanistan way back then. Came to America, couldn't speak English, learned the language, became a citizen, studied the citizenship test. And his dream is to act. And after being an extra for many years, he became an actor. And he's worked with all of Hollywood's top stars. In fact, he was an advisor on the movie Charlie Wilson's War about Afghanistan. You get to know Charlie Wilson. And he kind of schooled Tom Hanks, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Julia Roberts in that movie. He's been in many, many movies. Yep. Usually plays bad guys. I met him over there. He went back. He's like about the only Hollywood actor that I'm aware of who put a uniform on after 9/11 and went back to harm's way as an interpreter with the Marines in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. He was so effective as a charismatic actor, helping the native Afghans to like and love Americans, American Marines. Taliban hated that. They put a price on his head. Obviously, he survived. I met him over there. He wanted to do a book. And I have some experience putting words together, as you know, Ken. And we stayed in touch. We got Dale Dye and Julia Dye, Dr. Julia Dye, his wife, they published it and edited our book, which won the gold medal for top biography from the military writers. So anyway, he's been going back to Hollywood. We actually are working on a project right now, Hollywood-related, we can get into later maybe. But yeah, so Fahim, amazing, wonderful guy. We're both born on May 30th. He's my Afghan brother and great guy. And thanks for asking about him, Ken.
Well, and you did a book with Fahim. Fahim Speaks. And I understand there may be something from Hollywood. There's a Hollywood script in the works on Fahim's story as well.
Yeah, and, plug, I guess. There is a script, and there have been some meetings with some prominent folks out there, and the script at this moment is being reworked and customized, so to speak. So it's one of thousands of scripts, but it's very well positioned, and it's a real-life story on many levels, kind of relevant now with the current news from Afghanistan. So, of course, Fahim's an actor, and his dream is to have his own story move forward somehow, someday. I got to tell you, Governor Sununu and Joe Kenney did wonderful letters. Fahim's been in New Hampshire, and there are a couple of scenes that could be filmed up in the presidential range where you need big wind and no trees, and that's a great spot for some of these scenes. That's our hope if this ever moves forward, which it just might. To have some scenes filmed in New Hampshire, but time will tell.
Well, we will, I'm sure, be kept posted on that and look forward to it, and let's hope it does happen. So getting back to Afghanistan, what's going on there right now, U.S. troops have been there 20 years. Was it time to leave, or should it have been time to leave 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whatever? What do you think, Mike?
Well, that's a great question. Again, going back to when I was at Central Command when this all started, again, in the top secret war room, I can share now, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld wanted to minimize our footprint there. He wanted to try to keep our numbers less than 5,000. We wanted to topple the Taliban, take out that safe haven for al-Qaeda. But we got stuck in there, and it's hard to disengage, because of the fear that if we did disengage, what's happening now would happen. So how to avoid that? Again, hindsight's 2020, Monday morning quarterbacking, but we've maintained a military presence in Europe and in South Korea for decades, and successfully stopping wars in those places. It was a NATO operation, too. It's not just the United States, so they were kind of a leader in NATO. So President Obama built it up big. That's when I went there. And then, President Trump wanted to, get away from, get out of Afghanistan, which was in the works anyway. But the way that things have unfolded the last few weeks, we all think and know that it could have been done better. And God bless everybody over there. And hopefully we can get our people out.
Yeah, I mean, how badly was this handled by the Biden administration?
Oh, gosh. Again, as John Kennedy said, JFK, victory is 1,000 fathers and defeat is an orphan. So there's a lot of finger pointing, and that's fair. This mess happened on his watch, and I know, the administration is pointing fingers at the Trump administration with some fairness to that. However, the buck stops with the president and his administration on this watch, and there are plenty of aspects of this that just it's very fair to criticize. But for now, as we watch these things unfold, we're getting a lot of people out of there. There are some success stories in terms of evacuations. This August 31st deadline that the Taliban imposed on us. Yeah, if I was the president, which I'm not, I would say, Taliban, we're going to stay there as long as we need till we get out the people that we want to get out. So, you can take your deadline and do whatever you want with it. So, yeah, I think it's fair, obviously, to scrutinize decisions. But I think the big focus right now is just, you know, thoughts and prayers to get our people out. And once we're out, I shudder to think about, you know, the people who work with us, interpreters, and, yeah, and the women. Oh, gosh, it's just, you just hope that this version of the Taliban 2.0 is not as virulent as the regime from the late 1990s, which was about as bad as you can get.
Yeah, no question about that. Everyone is concerned in particular about the women and children involved. And, I don't understand why, you know, the deadline to get out could not be extended. So many people don't understand all of it and are perplexed by the way it's being handled, to the point where, yeah, how does this country not know how many, at least, Americans are in Afghanistan at this point?
Well, that's a fair question. And again, right now, I'm most concerned about getting our people out of there, not piling on. But, there's some hard questions that are being asked and should be asked and will be asked. And then, lessons learned. And again, it's fair to hold people accountable. Whether it's a previous administration for previous administrations for some of the decisions they made in retrospect, and certainly the current administration, of course, this is on their watch, and they need to get this as right as they can.
And you wonder why, you know, how much equipment was left behind, weapons, helicopters, facilities. We see, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda wearing U.S. military uniforms right now. I mean, it's just a disgrace. I mean, what we're seeing is just really beyond belief.
Yeah, I agree, Ken. It's heartbreaking and horrible to watch. See them driving around in our Humvees and our vehicles. Yeah. As far as the helicopters go, I have a feeling that the Taliban don't have a whole lot of trained pilots. But who knows? The Chinese. Speaking of the Chinese, I mean, they are already going public saying, look at the Americans. They abandoned Afghanistan. Don't expect them to support Taiwan. So geopolitically, this matters. So suddenly the Chinese are exploiting a perception of American weakness to rattle sabers over Taiwan, which, again, that's a consequence of this fiasco, which is what it is. And it's just, again, it's heartbreaking.
I mean, you look at it after 20 years and over 2,400 deaths of U.S. servicemen over there. I guess, it has to be frustrating for someone like you who did serve over there and so many others that did as well, to see how this is all, coming to an end. I mean, it just has to be heartbreaking for people like you and others in particular who served over there.
Well, thanks, Ken. I want to think it's hard for everybody to watch. Yes, it is especially hard for those of us who invested time and energy and emotion in that country, but especially for the Gold Star families that lost loved ones in combat or whatever in Afghanistan. You want to believe, like the families from World War II, we lost 400,000 Americans plus, and they think, I'm sure, that their sacrifices were not in vain. So that is the hardest thing, I think, for many of us to witness, is the families trying to come to terms with how this all played out. And you can't say it enough. It's heartbreaking, and we just hope and pray that this will unfold as well as it can. And sometimes in the long stretch of history, things make sense in the long run that we don't see in the short run. And so, maybe some things will unfold way down the road that will make sense later. But right now, it's hard to see it.
Lieutenant Colonel Mike Moffitt is with us, and Mike is a state representative from Loudoun, also a columnist for the Weir's Times, a great publication that comes out weekly. I'm sure everyone listening to this program is familiar with the Weir's Times. But finally, on Afghanistan, Mike, with the Taliban there, Reportedly, Al-Qaeda is there as well, and ISIS-K, they're calling it. What happens if we cannot get all the American citizens out of Afghanistan by next week? And also, you know, the Afghani people who helped the United States in the effort over there. What happens if we cannot get all of them out?
Well, that's a great question, and there's no way that we're going to get out all the people who want to come to America, which is probably many millions of people. It's not going to happen. There are some priorities, and we need to get our citizens out, and then we owe it to the Turks, the interpreters, and others who align themselves with us, especially if they're female, because they're particularly at risk. But, you know, in the military or in any business, you need a plan B or a plan C, or you need to anticipate the worst-case scenario. And I have to believe, I hope, I'm sure, that there were plans at the Pentagon and the State Department for a worst-case scenario, which is what's happening here. And I'm not necessarily seeing that there's a good worst-case scenario plan B to deal with this. So let's see how this goes, and hopefully it'll go better than we fear. And time will tell. Right now, it's day by day, and I believe in hope and prayer. And now's the time for it for those poor folks over there.
No doubt about that. Talking about what you're doing in the New Hampshire legislature recently. Governor Sununu signed into law a couple of bills that you guided and spearheaded through the legislature that you must be pretty proud of.
Yeah, basically, yes, I am proud. And as you know, as a former salon yourself, it's usually really hard to make a law or change a statute, and it should be hard. A couple of bills that the governor signed, I am very proud of. One is for gifted students. Gifted students, gifted and talented, get maybe less than 1% of financial support. New Hampshire, after some research, is around 50th in the country in terms of what we do to identify and support gifted students. So the gifted bill simply asked every district to just share what they do, if anything, regarding gifted and talented students to the Department of Education for a best practices folder to share good ideas. So there's no mandate, no spending requirement. Yet now every community is going to have to address and at least have a discussion, a conversation about gifted and talented programs and ways to support them. And another one, that we did have a nice signing ceremony with the governor on the civics bill, which I am very proud of. I believe in assessment and accountability and transparency. And yes, we have civics classes, but many parents were concerned that some of these classes focused on climate change or critical race theory or whatever, as opposed to the Constitution. So the civics bill will now require every high school graduate to pass the 128-question naturalization exam that new citizens have to study, like Fahim.
Yep.
And you'll need to get a 70 on it. And it's not that hard, but it's going to actually require that these young people actually know some stuff. So, yeah, I'm proud of that. So there's also a college version of that passed the House and is currently in Senate Education Committee that will also hopefully move forward. Why not have college students know this stuff too, I say?
Yep, so. I would have to agree with that. We've talked a little bit about this program in the past on the historic horse racing that is going to be in the state in the not-too-distant future. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, shout out to Representative Tim Lang, who you know, one of the Bear Caucus founders, who worked very hard on sports gaming. And that is that historic horse racing is in place. And now the question is, you know, how many venues can it be offered at? And so that's a work in progress. But Tim Lang, representative from San Quentin, wonderful work there. In fact, last term, when he and the Republicans were in the minority, to show how effective Tim was, I mean, he got sports gaming into law working across the aisle. And I know you have some interest in that. Ken, you probably bet a dollar here and there in a sports event. And now it's legal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're happy about that.
Oh, absolutely. And certainly has brought some revenue to the state as well. So anything happening when the next session opens up? What are you looking for?
Well, there's a lot of, you know, the first session is very much focused on the budget, which is done, very part of that budget. I am anyway, many others. So there'll be a lot of policy items coming up in year two. And we have 1 week in September, beginning on the 13th, to submit LSRs, legislative service requests for potential bills. And so we're talking about a good number of bills. I'm in the Education Committee and also Vice Chair of the Veterans Committee. So at this point, we're talking about different measures, but we don't want to duplicate things. And we also don't want to put something in that's not viable or that won't pass. If you want to chat after September 18th, we can tell you for sure what's in the hopper. And there'll be some very interesting things, I can promise you.
Well, Mike Moffitt, always great to check in with you. What's your latest piece in the Weir Times about?
Well, I just sent next week's column to the Weir Times. And this one, believe it or not, you mentioned horses. Course, historic horse racing. This one is about horses, of all things. And there will be a photo of me on a horse. And you'll have to get the paper next week to see what that's all about. I think you'll get some smiles out of it.
All right. Well, Lieutenant Colonel Moffitt, always great to catch up with you. And thanks for joining us on Feldis and Kale once again. And good luck to you and the rest of the Beer Caucus.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ken. Good to talk to you, and have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Mike Moffitt with us, Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale. Dan Feldis off this week. We're proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Joining me, good friend of mine, Dennis Martin. And Dennis, probably better known to a lot of people as Dr. Harp. Dennis, great to have you with us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is great to have you, and always around this time of year, we look forward to your group, Dr. Harp's Blues Review Band, and looking forward to the seventh consecutive year that you will be hosting a big blues festival this Saturday, August the 28th, noon to 4, at the Londonderry Town Common, and all proceeds, here's the important part, all proceeds will benefit the Combat Vets Association. Dennis, I know you're a veteran as well. Tell us about the Combat Vets Association.
Well, they're an organization that help, vets helping vets. They help homeless vets. Or if a vet will be in a need of some type of financial assistance, they'll help them. Let's say, for an example, a car breaks down. They need to help them fix that. They'll do that. Or something to do with their house or financial or food or, homeless veterans. Of course, I'm a strong advocate of the homeless veteran myself. Great organization, great bunch of guys, very helpful. I just did an event for them a few weeks ago in Ware, New Hampshire, and they had about 250 to 300 people there. So it was a really good time. And, what's great about this organization is like other organizations, they give 100% of what they have to the vet. So they don't take like this 10%. Some of the 501c nonprofit organizations will take, they'll take 10% off the top for administration. Well, the Combat Vets Association don't do that because they're all volunteers. Everyone is a volunteer depending on the chapter. And they have chapters all over the country. The chapter that will be helping me this Saturday will be NH51 and NH52 Combat Vets Association. Great bunch of guys. I've become very friendly and gotten to know a lot of them. Matter of fact, I was just talking to the commander, going over things about what we're going to have this Saturday, we've got about 9 raffle things that we're going to be giving off, giving away between a NASCAR jacket, Planet Fitness, which will be given a year membership, Market Basket. A local breakfast restaurant, Talis, has given us a gift certificate. There's a gentleman that's going to make a flag on a oak wood plaque. It's a pretty good size plaque. It's going to be an American flag. 2 blankets, which my wife has made, so quilt.
I've seen one of those. Those are truly amazing. They really are. Really amazing.
The quilt that we're getting itself is worth about $500, so we'll be raffling that off. I think we're getting some type of Patriots picture, and we're getting a painting on a canvas of an American flag. So we have people that have been donating things, and we raffle that off. Then we have the 50-50, and then we ask people to give donations directly to the Combat Vets Association. They will be there themselves. They'll have an easy up with a sign right in front of their table who they are, and you can go over and meet the guys and talk to them. They can give better information than I can about CMVA.
I'll tell you what, it's a great day of music. So tell us a little bit about that from noon to 4, continuous music at Londonderry Town Common.
Yeah, we're going to have 3 blues bands there. One of them will be Larry Dower Blues Band. He'll start at 1:15. He'll start at noontime. And Larry and I actually played together. He's a great blues player. He's actually going to do a soul performance that day. Him and I have done just him and I and myself on the harmonica and him on the guitar. We've done shows together, and he's just a really, really good blues guitar player. And then the second act will be, they'll be at 1:15. We'll be Larry and the Blues Clockcasters. And Larry L. is actually a guitar player that works with me. And his band is very, very good. And he'll be joining me for my show at 2:30, Dr. Hop's Blues Review Band. He'll be joining me to cover, because we did have a guitar player that was with us that was a veteran, but he has now moved away to Florida. So Larry and I have been working together for each other for good 5, 6, 7 years now. So a great player. And he'll be with us too on the third show with us. And I've got on drums, I have Eddie Stick Rax, Eddie Sticks Rask, and I got Jock Irvin on the bass. And those two gentlemen are veterans themselves.
Yeah.
Larry Dower is a veteran. He's served, and he's also a veteran. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
It's a great afternoon of music is what it comes down to when they hear the vocal stylings of Dr. Harp, as well as your expertise on the harmonica or the harp, as you call it. Here's some great music from outstanding musicians. But the bottom line is you are contributing to the Combat Vets Association.
All the bands are giving like 45 minutes of their time for free. They're not, including myself, none of us are getting paid. So that's a great thing. You know, I've had bands who want to be honest with you. I've had bands that they'll do it, but they want to get paid. And I said, well, this is a benefit. So I these guys always come through for me when I ask them to do it.
Right.
Last year, but because of COVID, we didn't have as many people show up, but we actually did pretty good with the generosity of the people from Londonderry and the surrounding towns that come. This year we're expecting a better crowd, between 300 to 400 people normally is what I get at the Blues Festival. And I think it's going to be a good time. We're just hoping people get the word out and pass the word on and bring a friend. And you know, a friend of mine used to say, you tell a friend, I'll tell a friend, we'll have a great time at the 7th Annual Blues Festival.
It's free. I mean, there are plenty of concessions and reasonably priced as well. You'll be well fed. Bring a blanket, bring a lawn chair, whatever it is you'd like. It's a great setting at Londonderry Town Common, and hopefully it'll be a great day for it, Dennis.
Yeah, well, we have a barbecue truck coming in, an ice cream truck. We have about 12 to 15 vendors, I think I'll have set up, which is just about right. I don't have too many vendors there, to be honest with you, because otherwise we want to leave room for people to sit. Bring your own chairs. Bring your chair to sit in, because it is, you know, there's no seats there. You got to bring a little, you know, some type of chair to sit in, or a blanket, or whatever you wish to. But you know, the more you spend at the vendors, the more money that we will receive right. from them, because they give us a percentage of what is sold.
Yeah, I have a great-looking T-shirt that I bought there last year. But, Dennis, always great to catch up. It's Saturday, this Saturday, from noon to 4, Londonderry Town Common, easy to find, and it's all for the benefit of the Combat Vets Association. Dennis, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Dennis Martin of Dr. Harp's Blues Review Band right here. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale. Without the Feldis part today, he's on vacation. We are all presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale. A delight to have you along with us. And joining us now is Stephen Nelson. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, it is our distinct pleasure, and Stephen is the owner and driving force behind Prospect Acres Obstacle Course in Franklin, and we have heard about that through our mutual good friend, Amy Hall of the Granite State Dairy Promotion. She has told us great things about the obstacle course here on the show, and I would like to hear about it from you. So, Stephen, tell us what Prospect Acres Obstacle Course is all about.
Well, great things from a great person. Amy Hall is a wonderful individual, and we love the relationship we have with her. So, Prospect Acres Obstacle Course is a unique 2.5-mile course on 55 acres of my wife and I's. And we have 56 obstacles within that we train on, and we have a lot of friends that train with us.
I never knew there were as many as 56 obstacles.
Well, you start with one, and then one multiplies to two, and we just continue to add on as we go to different events. And we get different ideas, and one of our things is if we fail an obstacle, we come back and we build it, so we'll never fail it again.
Well, this is in Franklin, and I have to say, Stephen, in all honesty, in all candor, full disclosure here on Feldis and Kale, that until Amy told me about it, I had never heard of the Prospect Acres obstacle course. How long has it been around?
So we've been around about 4 years. We are private. We're not public. So the way that it works is anybody that wants to come visit, they send me a message through social media, and we set up a time to come over and basically just come play on our play. We call it the adult playground.
So how does it work? I mean, can anybody get in touch with you and say, you know, I'd like to give your obstacle course, your 2.5-mile obstacle course, a shot, and they can do it? How does it all work?
Most definitely, yeah. So they can. The best way to find us is on Facebook or Instagram at Prospect Acres OCR. And what they do is they'll send a message to the page that it'll come to the team, and then somebody on the team will respond and say, "Come on over," or "We're doing something this weekend. Would you like to meet up with us?" We don't charge anything because we're not a business. But we definitely have a can that will take donations, and all that money basically goes right back onto the course.
Wow. So how did the idea come about? Give us a little bit of your background and what, you know, what made you do this?
So when I was in my mid-40s, and we all were in our mid-40s once, and if we haven't got there yet, we will. I just got to that. I wanted to do something fitness, but I didn't want to go to the local gym and just push weights around. I wanted to go into an adult playground. So we found one that has well, it's been closed for about 5 or 6 years now, and decided, you know what, we could do this on our property. So we started to cut a trail, and then we started to add an obstacle, and we've got a barn that has different things in it. And basically one thing led to another, to where we are today. And with the support from the community, we've got a great relationship with all the local people that come and train, as well as, I mean, we got people coming from Massachusetts that come up and train.
Wow, coming from all over to check out Prospect Acres Obstacle Course in Franklin. And I know you had some coverage from Chronicle on WMUR.
We did, yeah. We had Sean and Audrey come up, and that was a blast. The Channel 9 team was awesome. I got a lot of feedback from it. The one thing that I will say, we got a lot of phone calls for a lot of under 10-year-old children, which it's definitely an adult playground. It's not one obstacle. We have obstacles that you hang from, as well as, you know, just carrying a bucket around full of rocks that weighs 60 pounds or a barbed wire crawl. So anything, any listeners, we always want them to know that we're really set up for adults. All those empty nesters that are out there that want to come play or get back into shape because the couch is sucking them in, come up and visit. We'll get you back into shape.
I guess so, or get in shape, period. Maybe some people have never been in shape, like myself. So when Sean McDonald and Audrey Cox were up there, did they try any of the obstacles?
They did, yep. Sean's very fit. Audrey, she had a blast. She's done these races before. And we just had a lot of fun with them. Some of the obstacles are very challenging, and the segment that we did, we really showcased the obstacles that are challenging. So if you're not used to doing them, as you could see in that Chronicle episode, they're pretty tough to do. So you're not going to do it that very first time that you come. But we always tell people when they come to set goals. So if you know you're going to come back. It's just like eating a bag of potato chips. You can't have just one. So when you come to Prospect Acres, you're going to come more than once.
Yeah, absolutely. Steven Nelson is with us from Prospect Acres Obstacle Course. We'll take a quick break. Hang in there, Steven. We'll return momentarily right here. Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back. Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Our guest, Steven Nelson, who is the owner and driving force behind Prospect Acres Obstacle Course in Franklin. And this show is presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Steven, when did your association begin with Amy Hall and the great folks with the Granite State Dairy Promotion?
So this is our third year that they've taken us under their wing. So 3 years ago, we were at World Championships, and I was fortunate enough to do very well, and there was some recognition there. And Amy said, you know what? We need your group on our side. So 3 years ago, we jumped on the bandwagon, and we totally believe in chocolate milk as a refuel, a rehydrate, or a replenish, however you want to word it. We believe in it. We did it when we were younger, and we're doing it today. So when we get done training, whatever we do, the refrigerator's got chocolate milk in it. And I'm not saying you drink a gallon of it. We're just drinking a pint size to basically recover those muscles. From the beating that we just put on them.
I guess so. Now, you sound like a very modest guy yourself, Stephen, but I know that you're a very accomplished athlete yourself.
Yeah, I've done fairly well in the sport, and once again, I always tell everybody this is my addiction. I know everybody has an addiction in the world. Some of them aren't so good, and some of them are very good. But this is definitely my addiction.
So tell us about the World's OCR Championship.
So the OCR World Championships is right in our backyard this year. Stratton, Vermont, September 23rd through the 26th. And the Prospect Acres team has about, I think there's 30 of us on the team going so far. What it is it's 4 days of different events, a 100-meter race, a 3K race, 15K race, and then the final day is a team relay, which Granite State Dairy has put in three different teams for us. And then there's a charitable event that is basically you go out for any charity and you can raise money and donate that money back to the charity, which we don't have a charity team yet, but we might put one together.
Very good. So, you know, speaking of teams, what if have you had teams try out your obstacle course, Stephen, like football teams or basketball teams or any sort of teams?
We have teams come up quite often, and actually I'm working with the local officials here in town. They just got a grant to do a mentor program for 13 to 17-year-olds, and I'm hoping to be a big part of that. We're working out the legalities of it now, but hopefully that's going to be something that we can bring in, whether it's the local football team or the basketball team or just some youth that needs some direction.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's really an amazing thing. I mean, I was just, when Amy first told Dan Feldes and myself about it, you know, a number of months ago now, I just couldn't get over the fact that a facility like this is really in our own backyard in Franklin, not too far away at all. And where in Franklin is it located, Stephen?
We're up off of Prospect Street in Franklin.
Wow, very good. And 2.5 acres. So, I mean, there's got to be, I mean, it's obviously a physical challenge, no doubt about that. But what about the mental challenges of an obstacle course like this?
So, yeah, I'm going to correct you on the 2.5 acres. Oh. It's actually 55 acres.
2.5 miles, I meant. Yeah, 2.5 miles, not acres, right. 55 yeah, acres, yeah.
But so life is all about mental challenges, right? So it's the way that I train everybody and the way life is it's mind over matter. You can do anything in this world if you put your mind to it. And when it comes to obstacles, you know, everybody laughs at me when I do an obstacle with ease, and they say, oh, let me guess, that wasn't anything to do with strength, it was all mine. And it's like, well, you're going to work up to the strength to be able to complete it, but the biggest thing is, mentally, when you approach any obstacle, whether it's life or something on our course, you're going to say to yourself, I can or I can't do that. Now, the word can't is not in my vocabulary. So anybody that says that, I automatically say to them, do not say that word, because by the time we're done, you're going to be able to do something on this course. So go through the course, pick something that you really enjoy, and focus on that. So when you come back, you're going to complete it. And they do. 90% of the people will come back, and within 2 to 3 visits, will complete an obstacle that they said, there's no way I can do that. I don't have the grip strength. I don't have the upper body strength.
You can do anything.
I'm
sure some obstacles are more difficult than others. What would you classify as the most difficult obstacle you have on your course?
So the most difficult obstacle for us is the one that we call Swing for Life. So it's 50 feet of rope, and you're basically doing the Tarzan swing through 50 feet of this 10 different ropes that are hanging, and you're basically swinging from one rope to the next rope to the next rope. That was my most challenging obstacle before I built it, because I used to go to a training facility in Vermont, and once again, I couldn't complete it. So that was like the first thing that I built, and now I go through it with ease, and there's so many more teammates or just people that come that are getting it because they're putting their mind to it.
Mind over matter. No doubt about that. Stephen Nelson, Prospect Acres Obstacle Course in Franklin, great to have you with us today.
Oh, we're very glad to be here, very glad to talk about it. And once again, I I can't thank Amy and Granite State Dairy for what they do and letting us fill in for them.
Thanks so much, Stephen. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Feldis and Kale, 1039-1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com.